Live from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. We do have a lot of news to get to. The public has until Friday to make comments to the Town of Highland Planning Board on the draft environmental impact study for the proposed Camp Fimfo project. But the Delaware Riverkeeper Network says that's not enough time. They're demanding an additional Camp Fimfo hearing. Tim Bruno speaks to Maya Van Rossum of Delaware Riverkeeper Network in the second half of this program. And as some in the community plan to celebrate the bridge they've been defending, PennDOT defends its decision to destroy that bridge. The latest on the Skinner's Falls Bridge, plus news on the Coshectan oil spill, and more from the River Reporter. Ruby Rayner is going to join me live right here in just a couple of minutes. But first up, New York lawmakers return to Albany today, kicking off this year's legislative session. Democrats remain in control in Albany, but have lost their supermajority in the Senate. And Republicans are leveraging national momentum for conservative policies. But for both parties, the focus seems to be all in one place, pocketbooks. Jong-Yoon Han for the New York Public News Network has this report.
At a news conference Friday, State Assembly Speaker Carl Hasty gave New Yorkers a taste of what to expect from Democrats this year.
You know, I don't want to spoil anything, but I think people are going to be pleased to see how much of a concentration we're really going to have on trying to put money back into people's pockets.
Both parties are pushing hard for policies that address affordability this session. That's because Democrats, like Assemblyman John T. McDonald III, are keenly aware that Republicans across the country won on promises to tighten border policies and improve the economy.
I've always known that affordability and safety are the most important issues in people's minds. And we need to make sure that we are walking the walk and talking the talk when we come to those terms.
That's why Governor Kathy Hochul is teaming up with state Democrats to work on a, quote, affordability agenda for the legislature to consider. That includes sending rebate checks of up to $500 for qualifying families and individuals, expanding the state's child tax credit system, and increasing access to child care. State Senator Michelle Hinchey, a Democrat, says affordable housing policies and expanding access to sewage and water are crucial to reduce the cost of living.
We have to do a lot more to make sure that we have programs that make it easier to build new units in communities across upstate New York.
But Republicans, like State Senator Tom O'Mara, say Democrats aren't making affordable policies. He points to their tax proposals and plans for renewable energy, which he thinks would negatively impact the state economy.
I just don't think that the approach that the governor and the majorities have been taking is realistic. I don't think it's going to be reliable, and it's not going to be affordable either. In the long run.
Another topic lawmakers will address is education, specifically how the state distributes funds to school districts. But Republicans like State Senator Pat Gallivan question that proposal.
It doesn't seem fair to me if we're saying that we're going to give more money to people who live in certain zip codes than providing for those that live in other zip codes.
The governor is expected to emphasize affordability and health care, among other topics, during her annual speech to the state next week. In Albany, I'm Jung-Yoon Han with the New York Public News Network.
And thanks to Jung-Yoon Han for that report. And we're looking forward to many more reports and updates from Albany. I think that's the first report that I've played from Jung-Yoon Han. We're going to be hearing a lot more. Now moving on to some local news, which I need help with. And for that, I turn to the River Reporter. It's the River Reporter's own Ruby Rayner joining me live on the radio right now here on Radio Catskill. Ruby, welcome back to the Local Edition and Happy New Year.
It's good to be back at the Local Edition. Thanks.
Nice.
Happy New Year to you too.
Good. So let's start off, with a story I had, there was a lot of news at the end of year about, Skinner's Falls Bridge. You have a new article up. I think it just went up yesterday. Now, just to recap for people, you can help me out with some of this recap. The bridge has been shut down since 2019 due to safety risk. It's a historic landmark, beloved by many folks in the community. And, of course, the bridge crosses the river. One side of the bridge is in Milanville, PA. The other side in Skinner's Falls, New York. Can you give listeners a quick recap of what's been going on with the Skinner's Falls Bridge? And we can get into what the news is of your new report.
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, it's been closed now for more than 5 years. It was first shut down in 2019. And since then, the bridge has deteriorated to a point where the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, PennDOT, is the lead agency on this bridge, says that it can no longer be preserved. There was a lot of developments in the story late in the year, right before the new year, as listeners may have heard, and some residents wanted the bridge to be repaired and restored. That was an option that that PennDOT discussed. PennDOT said they would probably dismantle the bridge in a way that it could be put back together again, maybe in a different place to maintain some of the historical integrity of the bridge. But now plans to repair, restore, dismantle, or preserve the bridge are all out the window, and PennDOT is moving forward with the decision to demolish the bridge with explosive charges. And that plan was announced on December 17th, and it wasn't an option that had previously been outlined by PennDOT or discussed, which took a lot of people who in the community who loved the bridge by surprise. So cultural resource agencies and community members who really, really value the bridge are in heavy opposition to this decision to demolish the bridge. And PennDOT has maintained and defends their decision and says that they took the proper process and they came to that decision doing everything that they could.
Right. And that's actually the headline of this new article is, quote, "We did everything we could." That's basically your headline here. So that's the latest word from PennDOT. Can you tell us more what they're saying right now about this decision?
Yeah. So the River Reporter talked to Rich Roman, who's PennDOT's District 4 executive, which falls where the Skinner Falls Bridge is. And he told the River Reporter that when the bridge was closed, that they did immediately start looking at these different options. And he said, unfortunately, that based on laws and regulations, that there are procedures that you have to follow. And unfortunately, it takes time. So that's what he was saying in regards to all of the kind of analyses, reports, and assessing the bridge and the possibilities of taking one of these pathways of, you know, dismantling it and then rebuilding it, or what is the best possible scenario for the bridge. He says we did everything we could within reason, within the process. But unfortunately, during that time, the bridge started to deteriorate beyond repair and saving. So that's what PennDOT says from Rich Roman, District 4 executive. But groups like the Damascus Citizens and the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation don't necessarily agree with Roman's conclusion that PennDOT really did do all they could before coming to this now decision to destroy the bridge.
Right. And I will remind you, listener, that Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, the DCS, believes that it's clear that there's more that PennDOT could have done from their perspective. And DCS sent an open letter on January 3rd in defense of the bridge. They indicated that they believe PennDOT's own research on the bridge doesn't support the decision to destroy it. And the Damascus Citizens for Sustainability said in part, quote, PennDOT ignored well-known and well-documented critical repair needs year after year. The reason the bridge is in the condition it is today is because PennDOT has allowed it to fall apart, end quote, from Damascus Citizens. Making a claim there, Ruby, that I've heard a lot from defenders of the bridge, that PennDOT basically let it fall apart. But you basically got a response from PennDOT on this point too, right?
Yeah, so PennDOT Representative Roman did respond to some of these claims. He denied that PennDOT has avoided taking measures with the bridge till deterioration ruled out the other option. And he says PennDOT went through the review process for Skinner's Falls Bridge as quickly as the laws and regulations allowed. And I'll read here two quotes from him kind of speaking on this issue. Quote, "In no time did we say, let's just drag our feet. Let's hide the ball. Let's do whatever euphemism you want to use, so that it collapses on its own so we don't have to do anything. That has never been the case." He added, quote, "I'm sure people will read this and say they don't believe me, and I understand that, but I do know the process that needs to be followed," end quote.
Okay.
So that was from Roman on kind of answering that PennDOT, that wasn't what PennDOT you know, has done in terms of the Skinner's Falls Bridge is try to move the process further and further back in order for it to, you know, get to a point where this is the only option. And they maintain that this decision is, you know, came to be after following the processes and doing what they were supposed to do.
Right, right. And I think this is the first time I've heard them say that, at least that clearly. I know I haven't dug into this as deeply as some folks have. I'll also remind the listener that just this morning, I think, on Radio Chatskill, it might have been yesterday morning now. I'm losing track of the days already, and the year just started, Ruby. But we had Barbara Arendelle from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, as well as Cynthia Nash on, and you know, talking like about that letter, where things stand now, but also talking about the event that they've got coming up on Sunday, because despite PennDOT's continuing efforts to demolish, that decision being essentially final, there is an event of local folks who are still advocating for the bridge, still trying to defend it. Just want to remind folks quick what the details are about this event.
Yeah, definitely. So the community event is going to be held at the Narrowsburg Union on January 12th from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. And the guests of the event are going to include some of the original builders of the bridge, and investors of the bridge, and performance art inspired by the bridge. So it is a all themed Skinner's Falls. They're continuing to advocate for an alternative route than destroying the bridge.
All right. Well, thank you for that update. Let's move on to the next story. This one's about an oil spill that happened in Coshecton a little while ago now, but one of the reasons that you're reporting on it is because I guess you heard from folks in the community that just wanted some more answers about what actually happened with this oil spill and what happened after it. So what can you tell us about this spill? When did it happen?
Yeah, this spill happened 6 weeks ago on November 24th in the late morning. And according to Department of Environmental Conservation records, it's also the largest fuel spill in 2024 in Sullivan County. And multiple people wrote into the paper kind of inquiring about the event and if there was more information about it, details, as there had been no release from any of the involved parties in this spill. And the River Reporter was able to confirm with the Department of Environmental Conservation that a flipped Coshecton Oil and propane home delivery tanker spilled between 1,000 and 1,500 gallons of fuel oil onto the road and adjacent wetlands at the base of Shortcut Road, which is right on State Route 52.
Okay. All right. So then next on that, then what, well, I guess what are some of the environmental, how did the spill happen? And let's talk about potential environmental impacts of it.
Yeah, I can tell you what details we do know about how it happened and then some of the, you know, environmental risks or impacts. The details about what really actually led to the accident are still unclear, but the flip truck was a Coshecton Oil and propane truck, and it was returning, and Coshecton Oil and propane returning a request for comment in a statement that they emailed to the paper, said that the spill was caused by a, quote, accidental rollover of one of the Coshecton Oil's trucks out on Sunday making an emergency delivery, and that no one was seriously injured in the incident. And then moving kind of beyond what maybe caused this, but the environmental impact now that there has been 1,000 to 1,500 gallons of fuel oil spilled, is that the real imminent kind of immediate risk is water contamination. The spill is less than a mile from Lake Huntington. It's around 5 miles from the Delaware River and, you know, near numerous small streams, lakes, and ponds. And generally, you know, the Environmental Protection Agency says that oil spilled on land can often reach these nearby waterways, and it can cause damage. And so that was one of the things that was inquired to the DEC, was about the effects of this specific oil spill in terms of the water that is surrounding it. And the DEC said the spill is located to the wetland area. It's isolated to that wetland area where it occurred. And as of yet, the DEC said the spill response experts have determined that no impacts have reached the 10 Mile River and Delaware River. And in addition to that, there was a potable well located on the property right where the spill occurred, which poses, you know, a different set of contamination and other public health risks. And the DE said pertaining to that, that there's they're taking precautionary measures, and a consultant from Construction Oil and Propane is scheduling a sampling of the well. So that's kind of the immediate environmental impact summary of the specific spill and what the DEC has said thus far on it.
Yeah, so that's potential environmental impact. So what was actually done immediately afterwards to, you know, help reduce the effects of those impacts, whether it's on the environment or people, plants, animals, and everything? What have they done?
Yeah, there was mitigation efforts that did happen also immediately after and are also actually still ongoing. So immediately after, the Coast Guard Fire Department diked the area with like sand and gravel to prevent oil from further migrating. And Coast Guard Oil and Propane's contractor, Luzon Environmental, they said sent a crew, which included a vac truck to assist with remedial efforts. That's all according to the DEC. And they've also said, the DEC, that response experts have visited the site regularly still to assess the situation and provide guidance, because they're still performing absorbent maintenance and product recovery.
Okay. And I noticed that you also write that they, you know, put down some booms that absorb spilled stuff. They had an underflow dam that trapped floating oil and debris while allowing clean water to flow through. So you got some answers that folks were looking for on that story. Thank you so much for reporting that. And I know you will you'll keep an eye on this story, right?
Yeah, definitely. We're going to continue to follow the effects and see what other impacts there might be from this. And so if anyone thinks, you know, is worried about their land or thinks that something may have been affected, they can feel free to email. You can email me, ruby@riverreporter.com, and I'm happy to, you know, see if I can provide any other information from what we've already found.
Okay, Ruby, believe it or not, we only have about a minute left. If we were going to talk a bit about the weather, because, you know, the high today was about 12, or the overnight low tonight is going to be about 12, and that's what the overnight low was last night. So it's cold. We've got intense wind. There's winter storms. There's risk. You know, we know that we should, you know, check in on loved ones or neighbors, make sure they're okay in extreme weather situations. But you got some additional info of resources that are available for folks in the weather?
Yeah, I just want people to know about some of the Sullivan County resources that are available. There's two warming centers, which are open 7 days a week from 8 p.m. until 8 a.m. until mid-April in Liberty and Monticello. In Liberty, it's at United Methodist Church. And in Monticello, it's at John's Episcopal Church. So people should know about that. And in addition, there's, if people are concerned also about like not having adequate heating for their homes and like their ongoing safety, they can reach out to Sullivan County Social Services. And there's assistance through Home Energy Assistance Program benefits. And HEAP is also recently now offering qualified Sullivan County residents more assistance for heating needs. So that number is 845-292-0100.
All right, 845-292-0100. Ruby Rayner, the River Reporter. These stories are up now at riverreporter.com. Ruby, thank you so much for going over this news with us.
Thank you.
And we're going to move right on now to our final story of the night. It's an update on Camp FIMFO. Delaware Riverkeeper Network is calling on the Town of Highland Planning Board to hold an additional public hearing on the Camp FIMFO draft environmental impact statement, citing a lack of proper notice and timing as required by the State Environmental Quality Review Act. This morning, Tim Bruno spoke to Maya Van Rossum, leader of the Delaware Riverkeeper, about the request for an additional hearing.
The focus of our comments at this point is twofold. One is absolutely 100% the Town of Highland should be rejecting the Camp FIMFO Industrial RV Park. There's plenty of evidence and reason on the record for the Town of Highland to simply say no to this very bad idea. But in addition, currently what we're advocating for is more time for people to comment. We think there should be another public hearing. There should be more time for people to submit written comments, because When one takes a look at what actually happened in the fall and the early winter, the people really got less than 2 weeks' notice that there was going to be a public hearing and did not have access, meaningful and timely access, to the actual documents, the very significant volume of materials that that the hearing that took place in December was all about. So people didn't have notice of the hearing, and more importantly, they didn't have access to the documents that they actually needed to review in order to be able to submit comment or offer public testimony about the actual project and what their thoughts were about it.
And you have written a correspondence to the town clerk at the Town of Highland Planning Board stating that they did not provide that proper form of time or notice. Now, just to get into the nitty-gritty of this, there are these regulations that say that, quote, the notice of the hearing must be published at least 14 calendar days in advance of the public hearing in a newspaper of general circulation in the area of the potential impacts of the action, end quote. That's part of that regulation. But you look through and found that wasn't the case.
Exactly. We have been following the CAMFINFO proposal very, very closely, including the public comment opportunities coming out of the Town of Highland. And sadly, what happened is in late November, the Town of Highland Planning Board at a public meeting talked about giving immediate notice of an upcoming public hearing, immediate notice of the opportunity to comment, and near immediate access to the very significant volume of documents that were the subject of the comment. But in fact, in reality, none of those notices nor the availability of the materials did occur until less than 2 weeks before the one public hearing that took place was set to take place. We also need to recognize that this entire process, whether you're talking about the meeting where the Town of Highland Planning Board talked about a public comment opportunity, and when we take a look at the actual timing or the actual public hearing process that's open right now, all of it has and is taking place over the most significant holiday time frame. We had Thanksgiving, we've had Christmas, we've had Kwanzaa, we've had Hanukkah, we've had the New Year's holidays. These are all times when people are very engaged, appropriately so, with trying to spend time with family, with trying to do good works to help others in their community. And it really is a deep, deep burden to expect people to develop and submit comments on one of the most significantly devastating proposals for their community during this holiday time of year. So notification that was given by the Town of Highland Planning Board does not meet the requirements of the law. They did not give that 14 days of notice in the proper news outlets. And they did not make the materials that were the subject of public comment available to people in a timely in a timely fashion. So all the way around, this really put the people in the Town of Highland, the people who love and depend upon our beautiful, healthy Delaware River, at a tremendous disadvantage. And it really is an incredible disservice to the community. Not to mention the fact that we don't believe that it complies with the actual requirements of the law.
Have you had a response from the Town of Highland?
No, we have not. Not that I'm aware of. The truth is the Delaware Riverkeeper Network has been alerting the Town of Highland since the get-go, since that late November meeting where they were talking about the public comment process. We have been notifying them of our concerns about the amount of time that was given to people to comment, about the number of hearings, notably only one hearing during, the one specific time of day in the evening, which could be very inaccessible to many, many people, and that it was taking place over the holidays. We notified them when we were not seeing the materials being made available in a timely fashion. We notified them when the hearing was coming close, and we had noticed that there was no public notification compliance with the law, and we've now notified them again that in fact, when everything came to pass, We do not believe that the Town of Highland Planning Board has complied with the law in terms of notification and access to the materials. So this, the Delaware Riverkeeper Network's most recent assertion that the Town of Highland has not been acting appropriately when it comes to the law, or when it comes to, you know, providing an open and fair opportunity for communities to comment, it should come to as no surprise to the Town of Highland that there are these concerns and that we are in this moment in time when, in fact, we think that they have failed to fulfill their duties under the law and to their community with regard to this particular project proposal, but more importantly, to protecting the beautiful Delaware River that does not belong to Camp Finfo, that does not belong to the Town of Highland, but that belongs to all of the people in our communities, in the Town of Highland, upriver, downriver, across the river, who have worked so, so hard to protect the Delaware River from this kind of deeply harmful project.
If they don't respond and this deadline passes, what are the next steps?
Well, you know, the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, certainly we're going to be getting our public comments in, and we are commenting. We commented at the hearing, and we will be submitting written comment documenting all of the ways that we believe that this transformation of an over 200-acre tent campsite campground into an over 200-acre industrial RV park. That's really, when you look at the plans, what we're talking about, that this is going to have serious and significant consequences for the environment, that we do not believe that it provides appropriate protections to the scenic and recreational river corridor. And we will be documenting our concerns about the failure to comply with the law when it comes to public comment. Once we have those comments in and we see how the Town of Highland Planning Board decides to proceed with regards to their final decision making, you know, we will have to be making some decisions about whether or not we're going to take legal action to challenge a bad decision, or be ready, willing, and able to step in defense of a good decision. Right. If ultimately the planning board does do the right thing and simply says no, because there are so many problems with this project. Right. Again, the transformation of a tent campground to an industrial RV park, the failure of the draft environmental impact statement to disclose and to analyze critical aspects of the project, such as the storage of propane tanks on the site and transportation of propane through pipelines. You know, there are massive additional levels of parking that were not analyzed and or were not disclosed. There are so many elements of this project that we know about that are harmful, but there are also so many elements of this project that the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, through our review, identified were not actually disclosed or were not actually fully or fairly vetted in the draft EIS documentation. And that in and of itself should provide a reason for the Town of Highland to say no, because the Town of Highland and all of the people in Highland and all of the people up and down the river were entitled to a full, fair, honest, earnest, and complete disclosure of what was being proposed by Camp Finfo and what would be the community and environmental ramifications. And we have not secured that. But the information we did secure demonstrates that this is going to be deeply, deeply harmful. It's going to set dangerous precedent. And we are very concerned that if Camp Finfo is approved, not only will we all see the dramatic and devastating harms that Camp Finfo in and of itself will inflict on our beautiful Delaware River and our communities, but this is going to set precedent for a whole slew of more Camp Finfos to come that are going to take our beautiful scenic and recreational river corridor, our natural corridor that's enjoyed by so many and important to so many, and turn it into an industrial landscape moving forward, devastating it for those of us who are here today, devastating it for future generations. And that's just fundamentally wrong. And we believe that is not in compliance with the law.
And that was Maya Van Rossum, leader of the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, speaking to Tim Bruno just this morning there at DelawareRiverkeeper.org. A reminder that the public comment period ends Friday, January 10th. That's this Friday, for the draft environmental impact statement for the proposed Camp Finfo project. Comments are being taken via email, planningboardzba@townofhighlandny.com. That's planningboardzba@townofhighlandny.com. And Maya also let Tim know that the Delaware Riverkeeper Network has not heard back from the town of Highland about their request for moratorium on